Rob Rogers here from The Teaching Course. We've got a great show with Ken Milne and Salim Rezaei. Live from New York, it's the SGEM.
Well, thank you very much, Rob. Welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is November 13th, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Pump It Up, CPR, Man or Machine? And our guest skeptic is Dr. Salim Rezaei, and he is an associate clinical professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine and Internal Medicine at the University of Texas. And he is also the co-creator and founder of the Rebel EM blog, Rebel Cast. Welcome to the SGEM, Salim.
Ken, thanks for having me on the show. But before we get further into the show, can I ask you a question?
Sure, that I'd be happy if you asked me any question.
Why are you always so skeptical? Why can't you just believe?
I'd like to believe. I want to believe. But I need evidence to believe. And so I'd rather believe in more true things than untrue things. So I remain a skeptic.
Be skeptical.
Well, in addition to being the squad commander of the Rebel Alliance, you are also part of the teaching course founded by Rob Rogers.
Yeah, I'm really lucky to be just surrounded by some great people. Rob Rogers, Anand Swaminathan, Ashley Liebig. It's just an all-star team of medical educators.
So tell the SGEM audience where we are and what we're doing, because this is an audio podcast.
Well, as we stated before, we're in New York City, live at the teaching course.
Salim, can you give us your 30-second elevator pitch? What is the teaching course?
Yeah, let's just keep this simple, like you said. So our goal is just to raise the bar in medical education. We firmly believe that better educators make better patient care.
Absolutely. So today, we're going to pull back the curtain and show you the magic behind how we put together an episode of the SGEM. Each podcast starts with a case. So Salim has a case for us. Go ahead, Salim.
So let's start with a 65-year-old male, has a witness cardiac arrest. He receives immediate CPR, early defibrillation, as well as one round of ACLS meds.
Sure.
He arrives via EMS to your emergency department, where they tell you that he had a total of 10 to 15 minutes of CPR with no return of spontaneous circulation. You're working in a small emergency department. That would be you, Ken.
Yep, I work in a small emergency department. Love it.
With very limited staffing.
Very limited staffing. Myself, maybe a nurse or two. All right, so the patient is already intubated on arrival by EMS, and the patient is requiring continuing CPR. There's a mechanical CPR device in your department, and you're considering using it. You cannot recall any trials that have ever shown benefit in a clinically important outcome for adult patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, but you also don't have all the staffing to continue prolonged CPR.
So in cardiac arrest, high-quality, uninterrupted CPR has been promoted as being essential to help improve survival rates and survival rates with good neurologic outcome.
And just last month, the American Heart Association, or the AHA, came out with updated CPR guidelines. And one of the key recommendations in their summary was the continued emphasis on the characteristics of high-quality CPR.
That's right, Ken, because encouraging providers to have adequate compression rate and depth, they also want providers to minimize interruptions and compressions.
And I just want to give a shout out here to Brent Toma. His group from boringem.com, they put out some great summaries of the new AHA guidelines. And I'll put a link in the show notes that people can download.
So in theory, mechanical CPR should provide CPR at a standard depth, standard rate, for prolonged periods of time without a decline in quality and without interruptions, which should help improve survival and, again, survival with good neurologic outcome.
And Salim, there's many types of mechanical devices that you can use for chest compression. And the two main ones are a piston device that goes in and out, and then another load distributing device.
That's right. And to date, we're not aware of any individual trials, at least you and I aren't, that have ever shown superiority on clinically important outcomes for adult patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, regardless of which device that you use.
And now before we get a blast of emails, and we do get emails, don't we?
It never ends.
Before we get a blast of email questioning the importance of continuous chest compression, yes, we're aware that the New England Journal of Medicine just came out with an article addressing that question this week.
Yes, that study just had over 23,000 patients cluster randomized into continuous chest compressions versus interrupted chest compressions.
Now, their results showed no superiority to continued chest compressions by EMS. And if you want the SGEM to put our skeptical eye upon that study and do a structured critical review, then vote for this paper under the hot or not section in the SGEM, and we'll take a look at it. However, that's not the question we're asking today. What's the clinical question?
That is not the question we're trying to ask today, Ken. Actually, what we're asking, are mechanical chest compression devices superior to manual chest compression when used during resuscitation from out-of-hospital cardiac arrest?
And what reference did you bring to answer this question?
Gates et al., Mechanical Chest Compression for Out-of-Hospital Cardiac Arrest, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis, just published in Resuscitation 2015.
And so we go through the PICO, the population, the intervention, the control, and the outcome. What was the population in this study?
That's right, adult patients who just suffered out-of-hospital cardiac arrest.
And what was the intervention?
Mechanical compression devices.
And what did they use for control?
Manual compression devices, also known as human beings.
Yes, human beings, actually pushing up and down on the chest. All right, and what were their outcomes?
So it wasn't really clear which one of these was the primary outcome or secondary outcome. They just gave us kind of a laundry list of outcomes. And they listed return of spontaneous circulation, survival of event, overall survival, survival with good neurologic outcome.
And the conclusions from the authors were, quote, existing studies do not suggest that mechanical chest compression devices are superior to manual chest compression when used during resuscitation after out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. End of quote. Now, for therapeutic systematic reviews, we have a checklist of 7 questions. So the first question is, Salim, the clinical question, is it sensible and answerable?
I think it's a very sensible question to ask. And to date, we know that high quality CPR and early defibrillation are the two interventions shown to increase neurologically intact survival.
Question number 2, the search for the studies, was it detailed and exhaustive?
I feel like they did a pretty good job with that.
And how about the primary studies? Were they high methodological quality?
So the short answer to that is actually no. On one hand, they only included randomized and cluster randomized trials, so they were looking at the best evidence possible. But the randomization methods in 4 of the 5 studies just wasn't provided.
And the assessment of the studies, were they reproducible?
I think they were very reproducible.
And were the outcomes clinically relevant?
Yes, they were.
Number 6, was there low statistical heterogeneity for the primary studies?
Yeah, I'd like to give a definitive answer here, but the real answer is yes and no. Yes, because there was low heterogeneity for survival of event and survival to discharge. However, the heterogeneity was high for return of spontaneous circulation and survival with good neurologic outcome.
And the 7th and final question in the quality checklist for therapeutic systematic reviews, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Actually, it wasn't.
No. Okay, so let's go through the main results. There were 5 randomized trials included in the analysis with over 10,000 patients.
Right, and so the bottom line was there was no superiority with mechanical chest compression devices. There was no superiority with return of spontaneous circulation. There was no superiority with survival of event. There was no superiority with survival to discharge or at 30 days. And there was no superiority with survival with good neurologic outcomes.
Well, that's the end of the key results section. So now it's time to talk a little nerdy.
Despite having over 10,000 patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, this study found no statistically significant evidence of benefit with the use of mechanical chest compression devices, but let's be clear, they also found no evidence of harm.
And there were a number of concerns and limitations with this meta-analysis, and we're going to discuss a few of them. Salim, guess how many I picked.
Well, I think I've listened to your show once or twice before. I think you picked 5?
That's correct. The first one is confidence intervals. They were relatively wide in this study, around the point estimate. It's thought that this is because that the outcome of survival was quite rare for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. So even though you have large number of patients included in the study, the final event was small, and so this created wide confidence intervals. And to remind SGEMers, confidence intervals describe the range, usually a 95% confidence interval, around a point estimate. And the wider the confidence interval, the less certain the point estimate is, quote unquote, the truth. And the smaller or narrower the confidence interval, the more certain that point estimate is the truth. Now, I usually describe confidence intervals with my hands visually, Yes, it's a podcast, but visually. So if my hands are wide apart with the confidence interval, I'm not so sure that point estimate is the truth, even though that's 95%. But if my hands are close together, it's a narrow 95% confidence interval, then I'm a lot more certain that that point estimate represents the truth.
All right, so the second point, quality of the CPR. So quality of CPR provided in the manual CPR groups was not documented in the studies. This is an important point that cannot be emphasized enough. If manual CPR was high quality, then maybe the mechanical devices may not seem as good. But if the CPR was low quality, then the mechanical devices may seem or appear better.
Okay. The third point was about blinding. Blinding of patients and EMS providers to the type of CPR they were receiving was not possible. However, outcome assessors to group allocation should also have been blinded to avoid bias. It may not be important to things like ROSCE, survival to hospital, or survival to discharge, but it could be important when assessing neurologic outcomes. Only one of the five studies explicitly stated that the people assessing the neurological status were blinded to treatment group. Now, the bias should have been in favor of the intervention, mechanical CPR, and given the lack of superiority they found, that actually would strengthen my confidence in the findings of no superiority.
So number four, cognitive offloading. So CPR is a means to an end, and I think we often forget that. In other words, doing the high quality CPR is important, but that's not the end point of why we do it. We do high quality CPR in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest so that we can continue perfusing the brain and the coronaries until we can figure out why the patient had the out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Therefore, mechanical CPR is a way to cognitively offload our minds, not worry about the depth of compressions, the rate of compressions, while we're trying to figure out exactly why the patient arrested. Certainly, none of the studies showed inferiority of mechanical CPR, just no superiority to manual CPR.
And the fifth and final point I wanted to make when assessing this meta-analysis was missing data. An important part of any study is to know how much data was missing in the final analysis. And we like to see that benchmark of at least 80%. And while the overall missing data in this study was low, there were some pretty important areas where the missing data was high. Some trials were missing information on the assessment of neurologic intact survival. This missing data was actually concentrated among the survivors. In one of the five studies, about 3% of participants had missing data. That's not much, all right, but they represented 28% of the survivors. So in other words, 28% of the survivors in this one study lacked data for an important outcome. And this could have introduced bias, and we know that bias systematically moves us away from the truth. All right. Let's comment on our conclusions compared to the SGEM's conclusions.
So I think we generally agree with what the author's conclusions were in this paper.
Yeah, and the bottom line is that mechanical chest compression devices do not appear superior to manual chest compressions for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. So, give us a case resolution.
After 2 minutes of manual CPR, a Lucas device was applied to this patient. The patient was found to have anterior wall motion abnormalities on echo and taken directly to the cardiac catheterization laboratory. Unfortunately, the patient didn't survive.
So how are you going to take this information, this systematic review, and apply it clinically then, Salim?
Yeah, I think we still have a role with the use of mechanical CPR in cardiac arrest. Imagine working in an emergency department where you're the lone doctor, or you're a lone doctor with a single nurse, where you have minimal staffing.
Easy for me to imagine.
It's pretty much where you work, isn't
it? It is, yep.
Okay. What if you're in the back of a moving vehicle, like an ambulance or a helicopter? Certainly, mechanical CPR can do much better than a human being can in the back of those vehicles. So it might be that mechanical CPR can give us higher quality and be safer in many circumstances. I would consider using mechanical CPR in three scenarios. Limited rescuers available, like where you work, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
Prolonged CPR. CPR in a moving ambulance or helicopter.
Well, what are you going to tell the patient then?
I'm not going to tell my patient much, Ken. He's dead.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You are running a code. Yeah, okay.
But I'll talk to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I'll tell her that we're going to apply a mechanical device to help continue high-quality CPR long enough to get her husband to the cath lab.
Very good. Well, that sound, not that sound we hear outside the Innovation Loft, it's the Keener Contest. And last week's winner was Alan Seelaff from the University of Michigan. Alan knew about a recent study that used oxygen in a very unusual way. They attempted to prevent acute mountain sickness by creating artificial pneumoperitoneum by injecting oxygen into the peritoneal cavity. Oh yes, that's a little unusual. What's the Keener contest this week?
So what song has been recommended to think about when you do CPR?
Is the answer Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen? Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
I think I just died. No, Ken.
No, that's not the song you should have going through your mind. Well, if you know the answer that should be going through your mind while you're running to CPR, then send me an email, thesgem@gmail.com, with Keener or Gunner in the subject line. The first person to correctly answer the question will receive a cool skeptical prize. That's it, Salim. Thank you very much for being a guest skeptic again.
Ken, thanks for having me back on. I think this is my fourth time, and every time it just gets more fun.
And I also want to thank Rob Rogers for inviting me to be involved in the teaching course. It was fantastic. And I'd also like to thank you, all the great attendees here at the course, who made it a fantastic week of learning and collaboration. So, Salim, you know that as the guest skeptic, you get the privilege of giving the tagline.
So, Ken, since we're doing this live, do you mind if the audience does it?
I don't know. I think after attending some of the feedback lessons, I should ask the audience first. Is it okay if we ask you guys to give the tagline?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So on the count of three, if you could give the SGEM tagline. One, two, three.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.